So I want to talk tonight about some supports for practice, and what are things that are going to be supports. I'm going to adjust here real quickly. Sorry. Move from one posture to another. I think for some people, the practice, Dhamma practice and meditation is quite alive and vibrant from early or fairly early on. And there may be periods of really clear development and samadhi, that the mind that is collected and unified around an object like the breath or metta phrases or something like that can really strengthen, and that can be a powerful thing to encourage the unfolding of the practice. And there are some people who get that really strong samadhi, and there are a good chunk of people who don't. And for some people, it's like staying with the breath is not a natural or easy or comfortable object. And there have certainly been years in my practice where that has been the case. I'm not talking about the having any greed or any demand on practice to show us a certain amount of insight in a set amount of time. But talking about people, many people in Marin Sangha who've been practicing for many years, very sincere practice over quite some time, and feel like they haven't found a home for themselves in practice. So what might be a way to work with that, to find that home and or create that? If you're someone for whom paying attention to the breath hasn't seemed to be very fruitful, there may be some new practices out there or new ways of practicing that may be worth investigating. For me, practice has really deepened with the nine bodies practice. And especially it's a kind of been a different modality. I used to, like, if I would be on a retreat, I would come home and I would want to listen to the talks. The talks were like the really solid gold. On nine bodies retreats, the talks are pretty minimal. They may be these briefer reflections. They can be very valuable. And yet the guided sits can really carry me and carry others along. I know someone in Marin Sangha who found something similar with the Venerable Anelio's Satipatthana meditations, who may not have felt as connected with practice, but then all of a sudden this new way of practicing felt like it required so much less effort and was more enjoyable, and just this kind of ease and practice. So I started wondering, I had this opportunity to be in this, to be doing the nine bodies practice on a pretty regular basis, and I had some guided meditations to listen to. And I started wondering, could I do less? The person who's doing the meditation, could I let the person who's guiding the meditation just let them do the meditation, and me almost like surfing in their wake a little bit, like on a wave almost? And could I do less on my part? How much did I really have to do? Did I really need to repeat everything that they were saying internally to myself, and try to really get it, repeat it multiple times so it would get better? I started trusting more that simply that practice was going to develop as practice does on its own way and on its own time scale. And over time, there's just been so much less of a me who is trying to do something, mucking around, trying to make something happen. Historically, I've had some significant habits along those lines. And those habits, let me tell you firsthand, from firsthand experience, those impede development. So it's been a real radical departure for me in that way. And I just wanted to speak about that some more in hopes that that may be of use to some others of you. It's been a real major departure for me in terms of some of the dryness that can come into practice if things don't feel like they're developing naturally. So here are some supports for practice. I'm sure you have some of your own ideas. You're welcome to take any or all of these into consideration. And one, the one that I'm going to start with, you all know, or those of you who know me well know that I am a student of Phillips, or have been a student of Phillips for quite some time. So the first one is start with the felt sense. The felt sense is so important. And over, keep coming back to that, the actual direct experience right in this moment. I was really quite astonished. Also, just kind of an almost an attitude of staying open can be really helpful. I know, like 2.5, 3 years ago, somehow, Philip does his grounding in the physical body, earth element, and resting on earth. For many of us, many of you who have been long-term practitioners here at Marin Sangha, you've been hearing this. We've been hearing this for 10, 15 years, something like that, right? So that's not something new for us. And yet, there may be something more available there. For myself, I definitely found that felt sense of being grounded, just inviting that, may that deepen. Not in a graspy kind of way. We get to invite, we get to incline the mind, and that's different from greed. It has a different felt sense to it. You can feel that in the body and in the heart. And regardless of to what extent you have a sense of knowing the felt sense, almost certainly you can deepen that. Yeah, or that's possible. You can hold that possibility. And if you're getting down because you don't think you know the felt sense well enough, or don't do that well enough, you can self-soothe. Self-soothing. So this is another major support for practice, and I definitely want to delve into this a bit. This is a way to work with the ego, the superego, the inner critic. You may refer to this as some part of you, a young part. Philip has often spoken about the committee members. And as Dana would say, and as Philip has adopted from Dana, love up those parts. Love up that sweet one. There is, if that one is coming up and it's insecure and is there's this agitation, but I can't do the meditation. Oh, sweetheart, it's okay. They're there. Whatever it is for you, whatever that phrase is. I know some people, I will not divulge what the phrases are or what their pet names are for themselves, but I've heard other people from Marin Sangha who've shared with me what that pet phrase is. Whatever it is for you, touching the chest, saying that sweetheart, dear heart, sweetie, whatever that is, really do that. it's really a way, you know, kind of how can we bring compassion and kindness to ourselves, loving those parts of ourselves that go unloved, the parts that are messy, ornery, bossy, the know-it-all, the judge. How do we soothe them? Or is our soothing conditional? And just notice if that's the case. Are there times when, no, I don't want to soothe this part of me. That part is not right. Oh, sweetheart, it's all right. We don't want to do that. Yeah, so it doesn't mean we're not condoning what actions these parts or committee members want to do, but we are, as best we're able, there's another support for practice, we can't do it better than we are able, of loving up those parts. Some people say, oh, this is self-talk, this is pop psychology. But I believe in the Buddhist teaching. I think you can see this. Some may argue with me, but Buddha and his interactions with Mara, it's possible that Mara was an actual separate being outside of the Buddha. But I think it's also possible that that was some voice, something that was coming into his mind, his heart, something like that. And I think when the Buddha was saying, I see you, Mara, that was the Buddha using his own self-talk. So I'll just put that out there as a possibility, that he said, I see you, Mara, whenever there was his inner judge was acting up, or a critic or an ornery committee member, something that wanted to spread doubt in him or anything like that. Another support for practice, leaving behind as best we're able, and only as best we're able, judging, comparing, and fixing. When these do come up, they are not problems. They're just an opportunity to self-soothe. We just get to be with our experience right here, just as it is. A pair of items that I think are really useful in practice are vitakka and vichara. Vitakka, this is the part of a part of meditation that we have to do that requires some volition on our part. Vitakka is that directing of attention or pointing of attention or connecting with the object. Vichara, the sustaining of attention, the permeating of the object. I think it was Sayadaw Upandita who called this rubbing. You know, that kind of rubbing up against it, really kind of, what is it like? What is this experience really like? We make our effort with vitakka and vichara, and then we get out of the way. We let the practice be the practice. Hey, you're not great at vitakka or at vichara? Maybe you take that on as something you want to work with. You can develop them over a month, or 3 months, or 6 months, or whatever the time frame is. Very valuable, very useful to work with. Just to learn as much as you can, not to use as another opportunity to beat up on yourself. And if you do start beating up on yourself, oh, sweetheart, it's okay. Another thing that gets in the way, another manifestation of judging or comparing or fixing, is that mind state that an experience needs to be at such and such a level of strength, or needs to last for a certain amount of time in order for it to quote unquote count. I did a retreat a few years ago, 3-4 years ago, with the Venerable Analayo. And he was talking about, it was on mindfulness of breathing and going through the steps with mindfulness of breathing. And you have to, you bring, what is it, breathing in, one feels joy, and breathing out, one feels joy. And he's like, oh, even just a little bit of joy is enough for us. I mean, all I had to do was think of him saying that every time. And there was the, there could be that joy there, that small amount. Dana DePalma, who many of you have practiced with, she'll say, especially in the work with the nine bodies, as we're learning what are some of these different bodies like and how do I recognize them and this kind of thing, she'll say, even a hint, or a hint of a hint, or a hint of a possibility. You know, I just find like that kind of thing, or Venerable Anali, just how generous that is, what a generosity of spirit that is. And they're being quite literal. I'm actually quite convinced that they are being literal when they say that, when he says that, when she say that. And if some part of you feels like you should be able to experience joy, or you should be able to know this subtle energetic level, or you should be able to feel space and have a felt experience of that, oh, sweetheart, it's all right. You know, that's okay. Another support for practice. Courtesy of Philip again. Acting as though, acting as if. Just, we just want to kind of subtly, gently point the attention, and then trust and assume it's happening. Assume that it's happening. Assume that it's unfolding exactly as it should be in this moment. At the very least, it is unfolding exactly as it is in this moment. It's just like this. We want to stay right where we are. There is nothing to do. We, it's not us. It's not our ego or that committee member, the agitator, who is going to make our practice happen better and develop. No, sweetheart, I love you. And go play outside or take a trip to Hawaii. Yeah, you've been wanting to go. You've earned it. Yeah. And if we're saying that to them, it's not in a way to get rid of them. Okay. Another Philip saying, we're practicing practice. We're not practicing results. Is there anybody here who's ever gotten caught in practicing results? I'll raise my hand high for that one. Yes. Yeah. So I have often gotten caught in resulting. And that can, getting caught in that really, you know, it's ironic because it can come out of a wholesome wish, right? And yet there is this grasping in it, which really, it's like grinds the axle, grinds the wheels to a halt. Some ways to look for that. Is there some expectation that something will happen or that something should happen? Is there disappointment that something hasn't happened? I used to have so much of that. And so I'm so grateful that that has diminished a lot. It has not gone away, but that has diminished a lot. Yeah, and I really think for me that the way a lot of that diminished was that self-soothing, was that really kind of just opening to, it's like this. Ajahn Sumedho, this moment is like this. My experience in this moment is like this. We can do that with anything. We can get to know all of the hindrances. We can all get to know, we all suffer all the hindrances, suffer with them. And we can all also get to know them more fully, right? Oh, what is the felt sense of aversion? Oh, sweetheart, what is it like? What is aversion like? When practice is not happening, if there is some sense or some idea that we should be farther along, or that we should be getting this meditation, or that this sit isn't going the way we want it to, or something like that, then we can practice sitting at the gate. This is another thing that's been a really valuable practice for me. Philip did this literally with Balyogi Premvarni, the Swami who taught him the nine bodies practice. You know, Philip would go all the way over to India. He's got a week to be there, you know, and he would go to the ashram and the gate is locked. You know, what do you do then? So he would literally sit there, or somebody would come down and say, oh, Swami says to come back later. When? Come back in a few hours? Come back in a few hours? No, not today. You know? Or he'd actually come back in a few hours and then the decision would change. Oh, no, come back tomorrow. It's a hard one. I have found that really helpful for me with getting myself out of this mindset that something needs to happen according to some set timetable. Yeah. We're making ourselves, as we do in that arriving, being available, and aligning practice, we're being available. We want to be available to the practice. We are not in charge of how it unfolds. Maybe the gate opens in 5 minutes. Maybe the gate opens in 5 years or in 20 years. That is not our job. There is real value. There can be real value in practice to get away so that we are learning to wait without expectation of things changing. And if the word wait to you automatically implies some expectation, then just say sitting. We're just going to sit with that. With things being as they are. If there is the expectation that things should change, we just go back to self-soothing. Oh, sweetheart. Yeah. We can get to know the dukkha of that. There is certainly dukkha in that. Or that's the cause of dukkha, right? Yeah. Another one, as best you can, let go of tinkering, manipulating, trying to make something happen. That's usually some committee member or part of the ego that wants to get somewhere. There's no harm in that. There's nothing wrong with that part. Just don't give that part of the committee, that committee member, the keys to the car. They're not safe behind the wheel, okay? Out of compassion, just do not give them the keys to the car. Investigating can be a very wholesome activity. It has a curiosity to it, but it's not that egoic tug to try and gratify. Know the experience as it is without trying to get more out of it. I was in this group where we were doing this online meditation practice, this nine bodies practice over an extended period every morning with this same group of people. And someone was dealing with some health issues and they would lie down on the floor and they just said they were going to do, like, we would check in after. And they just said, you know, I just did lying down meditation and just decided that I wasn't going to do it. I was just going to lie down, and whatever came in was whatever came in. And I heard that, I thought, wow, that is radical. Is it possible that I could do less too? That has been a real turning point in my practice. And I'm sure many of you have come to this realization. And I'm sure there are many of you who have not. If that's the case, by all means, I want to encourage checking that out. Donald Rothberg, one of the principal teachers here at Marin Sangha, has talked often about the thinning of the self, right? The self isn't anything we have to get rid of. He talked about the thinning of that. So along those lines, if there's a thicker sense of self or something we can feel as the ego, or there's some part or committee member who wants to make something happen, that's another time when we can notice that and start to self-soothe. And less doing and more inclining the mind. Philip, has you all have heard him use that phrase many times. I'm curious, if anybody wants to take themselves off mute, when he says that, what is it, inclining the mind? What does that mean to you? Want to say? No obligation if you don't want to. Sarah, were you going to, or no? If you, no worries.
Actually, I've spent a lot of time looking at the three A's and what does inclining the mind mean, and actually what to me in terms of a felt sense, what do a lot of the words that Philip uses often really mean to me in practice?
Wonderful.
I would not be guaranteed that I'm done with exploring inclining the mind. But to me, it is, once I've sort of got through my initial beginning of meditation, it's simply asking and then noticing and not asking again. And I had to stop because I used to ask. And it was like, no. You incline, ask once, and then just sit and watch.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. Yeah. And you mentioned the three A's. I'm assuming that's arriving, available, aligning. Yes. Okay. Yeah. And I just want to add that Philip really credits Venerable Anālayo with that. Now, the arriving, available, aligning is certainly as Philip's take on that. But Venerable Anālayo, if you practice with him, there you don't just sit down and immediately dive into your meditation, or you do, but the meditation starts with multiple different steps in order to bring ourselves here more fully. And I have found, like you, Sarah, as you call it, the three A's, I have found arriving, being available, and aligning to just be just incredibly valuable. Yeah. Anybody else want to comment on inclining the mind or... No? Yes, Corey.
It's all, for me, it's a lot of that holding the possibility. So I may not even be able to imagine in that moment that I can, so inclining the mind can be more of that, like holding the possibility. If I incline the mind that way, holding the possibility that it could arise, whatever that is.
Right. A lot of trust in that. Yeah. I think of it as almost like for me, it's like when some teacher is pointing toward some one of the nine bodies or some characteristic of mind, heart, or something like that. And it's like, can I just, what's like almost like the least amount of energy that I can take to like point in that direction? Like Sarah was saying, asking, but asking once, right? How little, I want to be clear about my intention, that my intention is pointing toward this thing. And yet I also want to be clear that I don't want to be the bull in the china shop. I don't want to go into the china shop at all. But I may be looking through the window of the china shop and seeing that that plate on the back wall or something like that, you know. But that's it. It's just that kind of inclining or the pointing. Yeah, subtle. And how can I do it more subtly? Yeah. So how about for you all? What have been your supports in practice, or what questions do you have about these supports? What's your relationship to self-soothing? I am in the Nine Bodies facilitator training, and one of the members of my cohort is here as well, Allison Teal, who I took a class with her on the emotional body, which was really wonderful at helping to open up and find a bunch of supports for that. Boy, emotions are incredibly powerful things, and learning to work with them skillfully. That's another thing I think that's really possible in the Nine Bodies practice. But okay, so questions, comments. What are supports for you in practice? How do you self-soothe? What makes the difference for you? And if no one has a question or comment to share, that's fine too.
A lot of years of saying nothing, and now I will say something. For me, it's back to trust. It's trusting the practice and asking, are you? Not demanding it, just where really are you with this? And the other thing is the doing and not doing, and sort of looking at what's going on here? To slow down the fixing, I think, is, you know, it's an exploration. It's just, so what's going on with doing and not doing? What's going on with just that? Just the request and the acceptance of the, you know, what's happening. So that for me, I think is.
Yeah. Wonderful. I know a couple other Dana-isms. Dana, in her guided meditations, will say, this is a non-doing doing. Yet more permission for you to have to do less. Or maybe even do very little. Yeah. Another Dana-ism that I'll throw out there is often as she starts guiding, she'll mention not surprised to find a measure of dukkha. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I'm trying to make something happen here. Or I'm worried that I can't do it right, or I'm comparing myself with others in practice, or I'm comparing myself with these other people at work, or I'm comparing myself with my with my sibling, or I'm judging myself, or I'm trying to fix my partner or this situation, you know, whatever it is. Not surprised to find a measure of dukkha. Oh yes, that is part of this realm. That is part of our birthright in this realm. So.
Art, Bonnie has her hand up.
Oh, great. Bonnie.
Hi, Art. I'm new to the West Coast, new to the Marin Sangha, new to Philip, although I did take his Nine Bodies and Dancing with Life retreats. And I've also been listening to a lot of meditations from Spirit Rock. And what I find quite self-soothing is Sylvia Boorstein's chants or sayings. May I feel safe. May I feel content. May I feel strong. And may I live in ease. Yeah. And she has several others about that. And I actually find that repeating them is very self-soothing when one gets into that stormy territory or disconcerting territory.
Yeah, the metta phrases, that's, you know, really useful, extremely valuable practice. That's really kind of the one of the central practices in our tradition is doing that metta practice. And Sylvia, what a wonderful teacher.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Vida. Alice, you're next.
Mute me. Hi, thank you. I want to thank you for reminding me, or us, about the arriving. I sit down and I just expect it to be, you know? Yeah. I'm going to go into this deep state. And then, of course, I'm upset with myself. So thank you for, there's a process. And thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah, there is. And, you know, I sit down at times and I say arriving to myself. And it's like, whoa, where am I? And there are times when arriving doesn't happen, you know. And that's part of the experience, too. That's part of the experience. And can we just start again? Start over. Yeah. Okay. Alice.
Okay. So thank you for a great talk. It's very perfect welcome. For me right now. It's very timely. But I think for me, it's not really so much the self-soothing. It's just noticing the benefits of practice that seem almost magical that, oh, I don't do that thing that I used to do that I was really so regretful about. So just reminding myself that there is progress, even if it's not that much.
Yeah. Progress comes slowly. You know,
for
I think.
Some of us.
I think there's like, even the Buddha said, I don't know if the Buddha said it or somehow in the Dharma, there's this idea that there are kind of like four main ways that people get to full awakening. Quickly and with much joy.
Not me.
Quickly and with a lot of dukkha. Slowly and with much joy. Or group four. I'm a member of group four. Slowly and with much dukkha.
Definitely right. Four. Yeah. But can I just share one thing that I think
Please.
Is helpful as about not selfing? I just heard this little acronym, Q-tip. Quit taking it personally.
Mm.
So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah. Yeah, we take ourselves personally so often, so readily. Allison.
Hi. First, it's a pleasure to be among you, and thank you, Art, for so beautifully and also humbly describing this path of really finding your own way and trusting your experience and whatever that felt sense is. And I would say for me, the greatest support to my practice was giving up some sort of concept of what it was and where it happened. And very clearly, I remember this moment at Spirit Rock, which was, you know, once in a while we get graced with these fabulous sits. And afterwards, while I was walking, I sort of, it occurred to me, well, geez, you know, what were the qualities that were there? You know, this sort of sense of expansiveness and a dispersed sense of myself and a ease in my body. And then I wondered, well, I wonder how many places in my life I'm having that experience and not even noticing it. And I noticed, like, when I garden or when I paint, and then I realized my practice is all over the place. It's not just on the cushion. And while I was trying to have it on the cushion, it was so much tighter. So I just wanted to share that. You made me, your talk really reminded me of that. So thank you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Totally wonderful. Thank you for that. Yeah. Anybody else? Okay. You know, just kind of closing, we have such good fortune for being able to practice, to be able to hear the Dhamma, to be able to hear the teachings, to be able to try new ways of learning and practicing, both in our time here together, in our time away from here when we're doing formal practice and formal meditation, and in our time away from here when we are not sitting on the cushion or doing formal practice, which constitutes the vast majority of the time of our life. May this offering be of some use to you in your practice. I want to thank you for your kind attention.